Welcome to Interviews for Resistance. Since election night 2016, the streets of the U.S. have rung with resistance. People all over the country have woken up with the conviction that they must do something to fight inequality in all its forms. But many are wondering what it is they can do. In this series, we'll be talking with experienced organizers, troublemakers, and thinkers who have been doing the hard work of fighting for a long time. They'll be sharing their insights on what works, what doesn't, what has changed, and what is still the same. I am Sarah Jaffe, your host.
My name is Megha Anwar, and I'm faculty at Purdue's Honors College.
You were one of the organizers of the
That's
walkout
right.
Here
yeah,
on campus today.
Absolutely. I'm one of the members of the planning committee, and the planning committee is constituted by a whole host of sort of diverse crew of women. Actually, we've been very concerted in highlighting the work and the labor and the organization of women of color, of trans women, and so it's a pretty incredible planning committee, and it's hard for us to have done this in a small town like this, in a conservative campus, which is primarily an engineering campus. So, but we're happy with what we had today.
Yeah, so we are here in Indiana in Mike Pence country.
That's right.
I mean, I guess it's not Mike Pence country anymore because he's in D.C. now.
Yeah.
But
Mike Pence's country is spreading.
Yeah. I know. So tell us about doing feminist organizing in Pence country. And
I mean, it's been hard, but you know, I think more and more women are aware of the fact that their rights can very easily be sort of just, you know, sort of pulled from under their feet. And I mean, even here, this is contested terrain, right? Like, it's hard to win women over and sort of convince them why their absolute right over their bodies is imperative. But it's a struggle that's ongoing. But I think what's happening is that these are things that women of color and trans women have known all along, right? But finally, in a certain sense, white liberal feminists are waking up to truth at their own doorsteps. And so what is happening is that this is becoming an occasion for women, all women, cis and trans women and women of color and white women to finally join forces. And so it is the awakening in a certain sense, but I think there's a lot of work to be done still.
Yeah, so talk about the importance of a strike in particular.
Yeah, so, I mean, this is something that I mentioned right at the start of our event today, which is that strike has become such a tainted word, right? Mm-hmm. It's because the people in power are so invested in making us afraid of our own weapons of emancipation, which is why strike is a filthy word. It's the word that, you know, because we've been taught that the only way in which we have meaning is if we are compulsively laboring for the very people who oppress us. And so it's important, particularly today, because of women's, International Women's Day has a long history of radical striking. And so what we're trying to do is recover the word and emancipate our language and stop it from being the unspoken word so that we can liberate our souls.
How was the response on campus from students and faculty while you were organizing?
It's hard. Like, I mean, you keep organizing and then you find that there are still so many people who know nothing about what's going on. And I think it's, again, like, ignorance is not something that we've chosen. It's also something that we've been taught, right? We've been taught to be ignorant of what's of our rights, but also of the people who are taking away our rights from us. So it's been hard, but we've received so much support. So I know that a lot of women who wanted to strike, for example, but are vulnerable in their jobs, came out, and there were other women, stepping in for them and substituting them while they wanted to be here. There are other women who have not been able to come out at all, not been able to walk out, but they're all wearing red. So I think we're striking both inside and outside offices. So, yeah.
And you mentioned that there's a space downtown where
that's sort of
strike headquarters. Yeah. Tell us about that.
Yeah, so we've, there's a space downtown where the walkout, which is a walkout venue, but there's a spot in the town, which is Hannah Community Center, which is our headquarters. That's a space that's been open from 9 a.m. to 6 p.m. today. We've, like, all the planning committee members are there, and we've had people from the community, union members come out there. We have bagels. We have, coloring sheets. We've got this artwork going where we're creating one artifact for all the women in our lives and sort of weaving threads and ribbons together. And we just have a space where we can experience what community building can feel like.
Excellent. And to all the politicians who say that this is all just paid protesters and coastal liberals and a bunch of, well, we might plead guilty to being a bunch of radical socialists, but that's...
So, I mean, there are separate things that I would say to the politicians who think I've been paid to do this. This is one of the many things that I have not been paid to do, but this is one of the few things, one of the few forms of unpaid labor that I am willing to do and put my body on the line for, and demand what is, like I said, what is our right. To those who say that strike is only the luxury of the privileged, that is bullshit. Strike is the most basic form of resistance to the, for the most vulnerable women. And it is precisely the most vulnerable women that have come out and you know, demanded their rights over the history of modernity, really. And so it is... So don't you know, people should stop sort of shaming women who strike. That's one. And the other thing is, of course, that it doesn't matter whether you are liberated or not, whether you are privileged or not. What matters to us is that is how you're using your privilege. So if you have been privileged and you're coming out to stand in solidarity with the most vulnerable women, then you're using your privilege, right?
I'm Melissa Groover, and I am the chapter director for the Younger Women's Task Force of Greater Lafayette.
All right, and so tell me about organizing for the women's strike.
Yeah, so I would say that it's been a really powerful experience. Even the process of organizing has been really powerful. So basically, when we noticed that the call to strike come out from Tithi Bhattachar and Angela Davis et al., I actually messaged Tithi and I was like, should we do something locally or do you think our energy would be used best somewhere else? What do you think? What do you need? And she was like, no, I encourage, do a local thing, get a planning committee together. So we just kind of put an open call out for that. A lot of folks from YWTF, but we also really connected with people that we saw in some online organizing communities that were wanting to put different things together. And we just gathered in my living room and started talking about what would it look like for us to coordinate something here, and in particular, what specifically to our kind of community in our region is it important for us to focus on, you know, and we all really agreed that we want to center the experiences of working class women, particularly women of color, and have, you know, multiple ways that people can participate. But we also wanted to be really clear that we were using like strike language, and that we were really encouraging folks to think about doing what they can when they can to support this.
Talk about the people who are involved in the committee and who went on strike today. What was the downtown event that I did not make it to?
It was really cool. So the folks on our committee are like women of color, working class women, women with salaried jobs, academics, non-academics, queer folks. We had trans women on our committee as well. So I think that what was really, really powerful about the downtown action was that there are a lot of folks that were able to walk even off their jobs for that time right from downtown, and folks were able to gather there. And it was really powerful to see people kind of walking from, like, each street, you know. So as we were playing Bread and Roses, and we had probably about 50 folks there. I think that people are really anxious to be clear about how we can make the, I would say, the labor of women, both paid and unpaid, visible, right? So, like, we're trying to make the invisible visible. And what does it look like to be really honest? So, for example, when we had folks say, like, I'm striking for or I'm striking against, you know, we passed the megaphone and one woman who's a local bartender said, I'm striking against being called a girl at my workplace, right? And some folks were like, I'm striking for those who can't even be here today, right? I'm striking in solidarity. I'm striking against emotional labor, unpaid emotional labor for men in my life, right? And so for me, it was really powerful to get that kind of thing confirmed, because just in this past year, I've been thinking a lot about what is the unpaid labor that I do. So not only in my community, the really clear unpaid labor that I do, but what is the unpaid emotional labor that I do for a lot of the men in my life. And so much that I have an art project that I'm like working through that's going to kind of try to make that a little bit more visible. So this is for me a really first step in saying to my roommates, for example, that are men, and my friends that are men, here's some of the stuff that I do for you that maybe even I don't even notice, right? And what does that look like? What would it look like if I stopped? What would it look like if we all stopped? We kind of hold this world together as women, you know, and people would really notice, I think.
Yeah, and it's interesting. You mentioned it as a first step, and I think that's a powerful thing. Like, a lot of sort of some of the negative responses to this are like, but what if it, like, nothing happens? And so talk about it as a first step, and where do you go from here? What were the new connections that were made in organizing for this that can then build for the next thing?
Yeah, I think that's a really good question. And so, like, our letter mentions that we're striking to reflect on the work that women have done throughout history to, like, labor for us all, and then to reflect on what is our next move moving forward, right? So I think a lot of those conversations we'll have in here, like, even as we're kind of tucking away, I was hearing people talk about Affordable Care Act and sharing their own stories with that. And so I believe in the power of storytelling and counter-storytelling, where people can connect with one another over that and raise their consciousness. But also for Younger Women's Task Force, this is a really good opportunity to continue to build our base and to continue to have conversations about our own campaigns moving forward for which right now we've been focusing a lot about reproductive justice and sexual violence against women, right? With an anti-racist framework, right? And so Younger Women's Task Force is really thinking right now about strategic ways to continue to build our organization as it relates to working class women. And so for us, this was a really great way to say, to get to connect with some people that maybe we've seen a couple of different times before, and you're always thinking like, hey, we'll see you at the next meeting, you know, that kind of thing. So as people are leaving, you know, some people are saying, oh, I'll see you on March 22nd, which is our next meeting. And so we know that every time we do a public action like this, we gain more folks, right? And then more folks when we can strategize our organizing in the future. So we're really focused on our work with the Indiana Reproductive Justice Coalition right now, but we really want to make sure that we're thinking about and looking to see where working class women are affecting our own local communities and our state.
So tell me about the Young Women's Task Force and how did that get started, and talk about some of the campaigns you've been working on.
Cool, yeah. So we are a group of women in our 20s, 30s, and 40s, though we don't turn anyone away. We have solidarity memberships available. And we... a group of women gathered in my living room, I guess it was like 11 of us, in January of last year, and we just like started having conversations. We started meeting for a couple hours twice a month and started talking about what would it look like if we had an organization in our community, a direct action organization in our community for women, right? So for us to really, as those most affected by the issues that face women, how do we become the leaders in our community to talk about and demand how we expect those issues to be addressed, right? And so we started talking through what our, I guess, our structure, our framework would look like. What's the difference between direct action and direct service? How do we want to connect in that way? And then we launched in July for like membership. So we have what we call activist members and solidarity members, and we have over 60 active activist members. And we meet once a month, a couple couple hours with her trainings, and so we have conversations about like what is intersectionality, what is solidarity, what is how do you map a strategic campaign, things like that. And some of the campaigns that we've worked on, so we kind of threw some solidarity towards a ordinance to protect trans folks in the workplace in our community, a local ordinance that passed. And then we also did a lot of voter registration and get out the vote rally. And then we've done reproductive justice teach-in and action. And we've, which is an action where we made Valentines for our elected officials related to reproductive justice issues, which is behind beyond reproductive rights, I'm sure you're familiar. So, and so then we delivered those with Indiana Reproductive Justice. There was like 2,000 across the state that we delivered and had meetings with elected officials. So we've been really focused on that. So it's really cool because we divide up and we have like, we don't do committees, we have squads. Mm-hmm. So we have like a reproductive justice squad, a women of color caucus, we have a, you know, we make bath bombs to raise money. We call them truth bombs. Yeah, it's kind of like a Fight Club situation in my house, you know. So we just like get together and spend like 3 hours. But it's a great time because we connect with each other. We remember that we're creative. And I think it's super important to us that the process and the product feel similar, right? Like if we say that we're better together, we shouldn't be doing anything alone. So we don't do, when we canvas, we go out, we make sure we're at least in pairs. When we're making bath bombs, we just like get everybody together, and it should feel like the process of making the bath bombs should make us feel our collective power, right? And that's like, and it's about self-care, right? And then we're like, you know, we're selling them to make money for our organization, but it's like more than that. It's an organizing opportunity. It's helping people that, you know, may not have experience in community organizing feel like they can be connected to it, you know, and then that's how people kind of can get their in, you know. So
I love
super
the idea
fun
of crafting as community organizing.
Yeah, and it's really interesting because I think that this world is telling us or trying to convince us that we're meant to just destroy things, and we have to remember, especially now when it feels like everything's moving so fast, and it feels like so many people are making it their full-time job to destroy things, we have to remember that we are meant to create things, you know, and so we can work together to create a new world. So when we're working together to create something else beautiful, something that's meant to nourish us, then that can help remind us and help inform the process by which we work to create another world.
Yeah, it's interesting because the self-care conversation sometimes just seems to be like people being like, I'm going on a 5-day yoga retreat. It's like, well, most people can't afford to do that. But tying it all back into actually the praxis of your organization.
Yes. Really, yeah, I think that's, yeah, and that's so important. And everything, it should be so congruent. And to me, it was a really life-changing. I read this piece from Kriya in India, actually. Mm-hmm. And they have this thing called, it's like self-care. It's self-defense for feminist activists. I wrote this a few years ago, and like at the opening of it, it talked about how a lack of self-care is actually a form of self-violence. So it's not just like, oh, I need self-care. It's I'm perpetuating violence against myself if I don't do self-care, right? And that changed my whole game. And so that doesn't mean that I'm like awesome at it, but I think that it's really important to think about how for me, having people in my home is part of my self-care, right? Mm-hmm. Having people over, filling my home with creative folks, folks talking about things that matter, that's part of it. And that's what, and my roommates who are both guys stand in solidarity with us in that, right? When they come in, if they're, it's probably twice a week I have women gathered in my living room, right? And so they kind of slide in, and so I tell them, you know, you can sleep good tonight knowing the revolution won't be televised, but it's going to be planned in your living room.
That's great.
So I never apologize because it's an honor for them to get to be a part of it in that way.
Yeah. Yeah, so at the time you got started, you were in Pence Country, and now the entire country is Pence Country.
Yes.
So what should feminist organizers around the country know about Mike Pence?
That's a great question. I would say that he hates women. Or at least he benefits from perpetuating, you know, policies that are against women and people of color and queer people and trans folks, you know. And I think that, you know, one of our chants today was about, you know, it's like, you know, hey, Pence, step off it. Hey, Trump, step off it. Put people over profit, right? Yeah. And so I think that, you know, capitalism dictates that you know, he would put profit over people, right? But, you know, we want to center people. You know, like, we are a country, we're a world made up of people, not corporations, right? And so I think that that it's, you know, but I also think that folks need to know that Indiana was about to fire Mike Pence, and then he became the Vice President of the United States. And on one hand, that's kind of sad. It's like watching a horror movie and thinking the villain is gone, and then as the credits are about to roll, he jumps into the back of the pickup truck of the heroines as they drive away, and you just know. But on the other hand, it's really powerful to remember we were about to meet Mike Pence, so we could do that. You know what I mean? Like, because now there's more of us that are affected by the issue, and so we can connect with one another, and especially in Indiana, in a place that is not typically talked about to be about the business of organizing, right? When you hear about this, you might think Chicago. You know what I mean? You don't always think Indiana, right? But this state was organizing against this governor. And so we can do that. We can do that as a country, too. You know, we can connect. And we're not, we don't feel like we've gotten rid of him. You know what I mean? And so we're not going to stop fighting it. You know, like, we're not going anywhere.
Interviews for Resistance is a project of Sarah Jaffe with assistance from Laura Faillebois and support from the Nation Institute. You can find more information at necessarytrouble.org. Thanks for listening.